thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. with new episodes every other week. But for now, enjoy the Happy Hour podcast. Hi, the Happy Hour is here with your great mix of music and conversations around sight loss, mental health and well-being.
Plus, even some more practical tips and, of course, some of our favorite songs to get those positive vibes going for today. Just like this, a great throwback track from the 90s, Heartthrobs. It's, of course, the one and only, it's Backstreet Boys.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and it's the Happy Hour with Holly and Paulina.
And we're here once again keeping you company until the end of this hour. And as always, we have some great things on today's show. We'll be sharing some tips on creating a healthy routine. Paralympic cyclist and winner at this year's Tokyo 2020, Laura Facchi, will pop in to share her thoughts as well on how sport impacts her mental well-being.
And I'll be speaking with Glenn Turner about making the big move and adjusting to life within a capital city as someone with a vision impairment.
Now, some music coming up and afterwards, since being active can have a positive impact on our well-being, we'll be finding out about a new campaign that wants to improve access and involvement of those living with sight loss in sport. But for now, let's have some Cyndi Lauper. Now, earlier this year, sight loss charity RNIB launched their See Sport Differently campaign. David Clark, Director of Services at RNIB, has played sport at the highest level, and he spoke with our Lynn Morgan about the launch of the campaign and much more.
Well, I'm really, really excited that we've reached this day. There's been an awful lot of planning. It's absolutely fantastic to be working in conjunction with our partners Sport England and British Blind Sport on what is a really important initiative to encourage and create the environment in which blind and partially sighted people are able to participate in sport, enjoy sport, visit sporting venues, work in sporting industry, use sporting equipment in a much more inclusive way than ever before.
Why do you think involvement in sport is so important for blind and partially sighted people?
I think sport is important for anybody, whether that is, you know, activity, movement, or actually involved in grassroots sport, or even, as we've seen, right through to the sort of Paralympic level, as we've seen, you know, earlier in the month. And the reason why is because all that movement, activity, whatever it is, it's great for mental health, it's great for physical health, it's fantastic for socialising. But also, you know, if you look at the sporting sector, it's a huge part of our economy and our society. And therefore, you know, to know that blind and partially sighted people are twice as likely not to do sport, it means that people are missing out on a huge part of everyday life. And where we are seeking to crash down the barriers and provide an equal playing field, you know, in wider society, it would be really remiss of us not to include sport in that.
Many people who are listening to this will know about your involvement in sport. So how important has it been to you personally?
Well, for me, sport has been absolutely part of my entire life, really. I was born to two Scousers who got me into football and supporting Liverpool pretty early on. I remember going and listening to the crowd and just being completely enthralled by it. But of course, back then, I had no idea what was going on the pitch, really, because there was no audio description or in-stadium commentary or anything like that. Followed it on the radio and the TV. And then one of my fantastic teachers invented a football that we could use that had sound in it. And I carried on playing through school and everything else. And of course, you know, my own situation led me to playing Paralympic football for 17 years. But I now coach grassroots football. I have done for the last 14 years. And I see what it means to kids who are in my team and for whom, you know, the training sessions and a Sunday morning getting out there is such a positive experience, and they make friends for life. I think it's really, really important that blind and partially sighted people have those same opportunities. This is about moving. This is about enjoyment. It's about being able to participate equally. And we're really, really keen to make sure that those opportunities exist.
You played at the highest level. What about those people that you've just mentioned, perhaps, who are never going to get to that level at all? How would you encourage them to take that first step?
I really appreciate that taking the first step when it comes to sport is a real challenge, you know. But I think the way that we can encourage people is provide information and guidance around what is available, but also ensure that when people do go to a sports club or they do go to a sports venue or they're looking for employment in the sports industry or whatever the kind of aspect is, that it's a warm and open experience. I think the time is over for this to be in the too difficult box or too challenging box, or to create a bit of a scene when a blind person arrives at the reception desk. You know, I used to do a bit of running a long time ago, and I remember that first day going down to the athletics club and the level of nervousness that I felt about that. But I came across some really warm people who were really inclusive and included me in one of their groups. I was probably fortunate, but I don't think it should be about fortune. I think it needs to be about ensuring that all clubs have an understanding of sight loss and actively including, that make this a process that's easy to follow and something that there's less anxiety about doing. You know, we're working with some fantastic partners. British Blind Sport, you know, pushing this for years now and have achieved some incredible things. And what we hope to do together now is reach a much wider audience of blind and partially sighted people, yes, but also wider society, to say that, you know, blind and partially sighted people must be included at every level of the sporting pyramid.
Can you ensure the places that blind and partially sighted people visit will be inclusive?
This whole project of See Sport Differently across the next 3 years is designed to ensure that people are prepared at a mass level. I have been very lucky in my sporting career that I've met some great teachers, some great coaches, some great officials, some great clubs that have made me feel very welcome. I've also had the opposite of that, and the experience of that, and the anxiety and the reluctance that that can bring. But what we're trying to do is to educate, inform, and work with partners across the sporting arena to ensure that that environment, whether you're going to watch a game of rugby, or whether you want to participate in a local club, or whether you just want to do some exercise classes online, we want to make sure that those people providing those services have the skills, first of all, to do so, but also understand that it is as important as for any other of their customers to create the right environment. And when they think about customer, who are they thinking about? And absolutely including blind and partially sighted people in their thoughts. Because if they do that, then it becomes a lot less about luck and a lot more about the environment that they've created.
In an ideal world, what are your hopes for See Sport Differently?
What I'm hoping that we can do as a partnership is bring some real scale to this right across all of the settings in which we're going to be operating, be it venues, be it clubs, and that people will feel at the end of it that many, many, many more blind and partially sighted people will feel that they've been able to have the doors opened for them and be welcomed in. A lot of this is encouraging people to reach out to people who may not have even considered doing sport, may not even be aware of the benefits of doing sport, but once they're in, they'll hopefully be hooked. And so whether it's someone that's able to join a new gym class, or whether it's having a really positive experience going to the local stadium to watch the sport of their choice, or whether it's working in the industry. At the end of this 3 years, we want that to be a realistic opportunity for everyone and for there not to be unnecessary barriers in the way that prevent it. So what I would ask people to do, if you can, is to take a look at the website, which is rnib.org.uk/seesportdifferently, because there you will find a wealth of information about what we're planning over the next 3 years. You'll also be able to watch and listen to our video, which shows the whole ethos of why we're doing this and the sort of call to action and what we're trying to achieve over the next 3 years. But what I do hope is that everyone listening to this who wants to participate in sport or is just considering participating in sport will feel emboldened and encouraged. And at the end of 3 years, we genuinely hope that we will have completely changed the environment so that people will think of it as a very, very normal thing. When a blind person walks through to the reception of a club or a stadium or whatever, it will just be any old customer that they've already thought about and they already understand and they're ready to help as they would anyone else.
David Clark, Director of Services at RNIB, thank you for speaking to RNIB Connect Radio today.
Pleasure, thank you.
Lynn Morgan there, speaking with RNIB's David Clark. Blind and partially sighted people are twice as likely to be inactive. I find it shocking, but in a way not surprising, due to the amount of barriers that we face when accessing sport and places such as gyms. I've heard many blind and partially sighted people say that they can't access places such as gyms due to a lack of knowledge from staff or worries around the lack of accessibility.
Yeah, because equipment's not always accessible. And I don't know, do you go to the gym, Holly? Because I know you do stay active, but I don't think I've ever heard of you going to an actual gym before.
No, personally, I don't go to the gym. But if I did, I think I would be worried about those things as well. So it seems to be really common.
So it's really nice to actually see that the campaign is, I guess, in a way, helping raise awareness and putting that onus on all those sport organizations to actually consider accessibility as part of their offer.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope it can go some way in raising awareness and striving to change those barriers.
And it's also, obviously, we talk a lot about how sport can have such a good impact on our mental health. And like, we're going to actually hear from another Paralympian, and we're going to hear from cyclist Laura Fackey. And I know you followed a little bit of the Paralympic Games this year. Have you heard how well she's done?
Yeah, her and her husband won gold, right? Which is amazing.
I know. And I think it was like maybe an hour apart from each other. So definitely, they probably did some really great celebrations when it happened. So, you know, it's amazing to hear about that. Would you consider, I know you do a little bit of cycling or tandem cycling. Would you consider doing the Paris Paralympics next?
100% do not think I'm up to that level, but I'll leave it to Laura.
Yeah, let's hear from Laura and let's see what she has to say about keeping well and looking after her mental health.
For me, it's basically what gets me through, to be honest. That like, and it's not just cycling, like especially if cycling is starting to kind of stress me out or I'm feeling the pressures of competing or anything like that, going for a walk and getting outside and just the fresh air just is so calming, and it gives me that headspace to get any, you know, stray thoughts or whatever in order, and it just makes you feel good.
Glenn Turner is a visually impaired blogger, YouTuber, accessibility advocate, and culture vulture. He also works as an IT developer at Torbay Council. He has two eye conditions, aniridia and nystagmus. Glenn grew up in Devon, but a few years ago he took the leap along with his mum and moved to London. He joins me now to talk about the move and what his life is like now as a person with a vision impairment living in London. Thank you so much for joining me on the Happy Hour, Glenn.
You're very welcome. Pleasure to meet you.
What made you decide to move to London?
It was chance, really, that led to the opportunity. the decision was originally going to be to move to Exeter because that was where I had all my education growing up. But when my nan passed away at the age of 105, her house came up as an inheritance, and the time was right for my mother and I to move up. So we did, and we just took the leap, took the chance, and that's how things have gone, basically. But it would never have happened if it had been, say, a few years earlier or anything like that. So, yeah, we just took the opportunity when it came up.
Are you glad you took that opportunity?
Absolutely. I mean, there's so much going on in the city. I've discovered so much about what there is to do here. I've discovered so much about myself and what I'm capable of, grown so much in confidence, tried so many new things. It's been absolutely fantastic, more than I ever expected it to be.
How did you adjust to life in the capital city?
Well, in some respects, it wasn't too bad because I'd always visited a lot growing up. As I say, we inherited my nan's house, so I've always visited there during my childhood. So it was very familiar in that respect. I was already used to travelling on the tube and the buses and visiting museums and things. So in terms of navigating the city, it's not as daunting as it would have been for other people. You know, I can appreciate if you're moving from the country or something, then it would be very overwhelming moving to a big metropolis like that. The issue for me was really meeting new people and forming a new social circle from scratch. I wasn't sure how to do that at first, so that took a bit of work, but thankfully I've managed to do that over the years as well. But that was certainly the big challenge, I think, was meeting new people and just forming a new network of friends.
Yeah, making friends and establishing new connections is a huge part of moving to a new city. What has your experience been like of doing this?
It's been better than I expected, really. I've discovered so much about what there is up here. I did a lot of research before I moved, obviously, all online, of course, as that's the way to do things these days. And one of the things I discovered was this huge community of disabled people online, like bloggers like yourself and various other people. So that inspired me to start writing my own blog. And I've made connections via that that I'd never expected to make through individuals and charities and organisations and things. But then there are also various social groups in London that I discovered as well, for regular people and also for visually impaired people as well. There's lots of social opportunities for visually impaired people to get together. So discovering all those different avenues, meeting people who are disabled and not disabled, has enabled me to try out lots of different things, different activities, and meet lots of different people. And yeah, it was a test of my confidence to begin with. I was naturally very shy and didn't know how well I'd fit in, but it's gone surprisingly well once you start dipping your toes into the water of blogging and socialising and all this kind of stuff. It soon adds up bit by bit over the years, and you achieve quite a lot.
Were you ever worried about feeling lonely or isolated when you moved to the city?
Yes, absolutely, because I didn't know how well I would fit in. You know, I didn't think I had a particularly interesting life necessarily, just an average life like anybody else, with friends doing average things and stuff like that. And I know that a lot of people do a lot of exciting things in London because there's lots of things going on. So how do I fit in with that? Would people be interested in talking to me and things like that? But it was surprising, from the very first kind of social groups I went to, people loved meeting someone new, someone different, someone who was from a different place to them. And they were keen to help me fit in and enjoy myself. So, people are social animals. If they're going to social events, then they want to be social, really. That's the thing you have to remember. So they want to meet new people and to talk to new people. So you're more interesting than you think you are, I think that's the thing I learned. And people do take an interest in you, not just because of your eyesight, but just because of the things you like and the things you do. It's surprising how quickly you can get along with people.
It's been a few years since you moved to London. Have you built up a circle of friends and connections now?
Yes, definitely. I've got quite a few close friends in the city now, which is fantastic. Some of which I've met through my blogging, who've got in touch with me directly that way. Some of whom I've met through social groups, through the visually impaired social groups in particular, and a few connections elsewhere too. So it's gradually built up over the years and it's still building up now bit by bit. I've been very happy with how it's been growing nice and organically, nice and naturally. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what the years ahead bring. It's been great so far.
You're a huge fan of theatre shows and concerts. How has it felt being able to immerse yourself in accessible theatre performances, trips to local tourist attractions right on your doorstep, and other such activities?
Oh, it's been amazing. I mean, theatre, I had no idea that audio-described performances and touch tours existed before I came here. So as soon as I discovered that, that was an amazing revelation, and I've loved doing that ever since. Being able to go up on the stage before a show and look at the set and the props and things, and to meet members of the cast sometimes, it's just been absolutely amazing. And then to get audio description during the performance, so I'm on a level playing field with the rest of the audience, and I know what's going on, and I can laugh in the right places and, you know, applaud for the right reasons, and, you know, not miss out on any of the little secrets and any little details that might be important to the plot and things like that. It's really helped me to immerse myself in the type of things that I enjoy, like musical shows, but also I've been able to try new things like, you know, ballet and Shakespeare and things like that that I would otherwise have avoided. So I've been able to try out new things as well as trying out things I know I would like. Likewise with museums, you know, having audio described tours and being able to handle objects and things like that has also been fantastic. Again, I had no idea that kind of thing existed before. And yeah, other attractions, you can get audio described tours and things like that. And the fact that I can just hop on the tube and go to these places is just fantastic. And I don't think I'll ever be able to explore everything in the city because there's always so much going on, always new things coming out all the time. So I'm never going to get bored up here, I don't think.
Like we said, you've lived in London for a few years now. Are you content and happy where you are in life now?
Yes, very much so. It's been a fantastic new chapter in my life. I've discovered so much about myself and the world around me, and I've grown in confidence so much. It's been the big step forward that I needed, I think, really, more than I realised at the time. But looking back at it in hindsight, it's been such a change for me, and I'm so glad that I just had the kind of bravery and the courage to take that leap and just do something completely different, move somewhere completely new. It's been so refreshing and wonderful, and I'm really looking forward to just seeing what the years ahead have in store, because I've come to appreciate that, you know, you only get one life, and, you know, you've got to try these things, you've got to take the opportunities when they come, because you never know what will result from them.
If you had one piece of advice for any blind or visually impaired people wanting to move to a new city, what would it be?
Don't be afraid to do it. If it's something that you want to do, then absolutely go for it. You know, there is a lot of support out there. I mean, in London, there's naturally lots of organisations that can help you, lots of people you can meet up with who are visually impaired and disabled, and even meeting up with non-disabled people can be very beneficial too. So, you know, do your research online and contact charities and organisations, things like that. But even in other big cities as well, there are, you know, organisations and charities and groups that can help you. So absolutely do the research, you know, look around on, you know, Google and Twitter, Facebook groups. There are bound to be groups on Facebook who can help you, either on a national level or a local level. So hook into the community online and do the research, and you'll be surprised what you can find out about what's available. But don't be afraid to go for it. Don't be afraid to take that chance. If that's something that in your gut you feel you want to do, then absolutely go for it, and or at least explore the possibility, because you'll be surprised what you find.
Where can people find your blog, YouTube channel and social media if they'd like to get a bit more of an insight or just read some new content?
So my blog is at wellineever.com, and that's the word I, E-Y-E in the middle. So wellineever.com. Twitter, I am at well_I_never. Then that's the word I in the middle again. Likewise, YouTube, it's wellineever. And Facebook and Instagram, same again, wellineever. All the links are on my blog, though. So if you go to wellineever.com, there's all the links there for you to get to all my different places.
Fantastic. Well, Glenn, it's been brilliant to chat to you. Thank you so much for joining us on the Happy Hour.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's been great.
Kylie and Robbie and kids, the song, of course, and not their kids. As far as I'm aware, they don't have any of, well, they have their own kids, but not together. Now, if you're struggling to keep active and as the days grow shorter and colder, well, there are some tips that could help you. So let's hear them.
My name is Chris Simpson from the organizational development team. So this episode is going to be kind of not specifically just on exercise, but creating a healthy routine. And it's based on the work of Dr. Beth Healy, who worked for the European Space Agency and spent 9 months in Antarctica at the Concordia Station. And she researched the effects of physical and psychological isolation on crew members and came up with some kind of top tips herself that I'm going to share now in regards to how we can create a healthy routine. And it's not just exercise, but there's a big part of it. So the first thing is to set some goals and make sure that they're achievable goals. And also look at what your motivation is. You know, why do you want to do this exercise? you know, pressuring yourself into a better physique, which may be based on underlying body image issues, is just not probably the best way to go about it at the moment. And instead, maybe switching your thinking to, I'm doing this because I want to switch off from work, or I want to, I don't know, engage with my mind differently, is probably going to be more productive than setting kind of goals about having a six pack by a certain date. What we do ask is that you switch these into what we call SMART goals. And you might have heard this in a business sense, but I've applied this so much in the past with others and supporting others, including myself, by putting these into SMART goals in a personal sense. So what a SMART goal is you need to make it specific. And that's what the S is. So really drill down and make your goal or objective specific. You need to make it measurable. That's the M. So how will I know I've done it? What's my evidence that I've done it? You need to make it achievable. Very important you make it achievable. And a lot of research tells us that if you set a goal that is too easy, you won't do it. You'll disengage. If you set a goal that's too hard, you won't do it. You'll disengage. So it's very, very important that you set the goal between those two distances. It's something a guy called Lev Vygotsky described as the zone of proximal development. And it's very true. It sounds a bit of a fancy phrase, but it's very true. That if you can set goals between those two distances, that's a bit of a stretch, but it is achievable, you're more likely to meet them. So make sure it's achievable. And the R stands for relevant. And we've kind of already established that it's relevant because of the situation we're in at the moment. And you need to make it time bound. So actually, there's a deadline for it. So an example of a non-SMART goal would be New Year's Day. I'm sure a lot of us will have done this. I want to get more healthy, or I want to get more fit. I want to do more exercise. And a year later, we're probably setting the same goal. A SMART version of that would be, I want to get fit enough to run a half marathon in under 2 hours in June. That's a SMART goal. It's really specific. It's measurable because you've said, I want to do it within 2 hours. It's probably achievable. It's relevant to you because you're setting it as something that's important to you, and it's time bound. I want to do it by June. So try and make sure when you're setting these goals, tick off each of those five. Unfortunately, I see so much across different organizations. I see SMART goals, I see MART goals, I see SMER goals, but you've got to make sure you tick off all five of those and you will achieve your objectives. Number two is when you're doing this healthy routine, trust the professionals. Now, the 30-day plan of how to do a plank for 5 minutes. What's really interesting about this is that, for instance, someone like myself, I would have thought, okay, to even start getting to 5 minutes, I need to start straight away by doing like a minute to a minute and a half straight away off the bat. And what's interesting, the professionals say, no, you don't even look at a minute and a half till day 12. You need to build up your capacity in small chunks over a longer period of time with rest. So day one is 20 seconds, day two is 20 seconds, day four is 30 seconds, day five is 40 seconds, then you have a day off. And it goes up and up and up all the way through to a minute and a half wouldn't even be until day 12. And then you get a day off afterwards anyway. And eventually you'd be able to get to 5 minutes without stopping. I run a couple of half marathons in the last 6 months or so. And that came from a complete standing start between the ages of 0 and 35. I'd never done any running, and I did the stupid thing of, you know, I just moved the dress and I found somewhere that I thought would be a great place to run, and on the Saturday I ran 5k and I thought I feel fine. On the Sunday I ran 5k and thought I feel fine, so I thought I'll do it on the Monday as well, and I broke down injured. So it's really important that you follow a professional training plan. Run on a Monday, Wednesday and Sunday, and the Monday distance pretty much stays the same throughout, and the Wednesday and Sunday distance each week goes up incrementally. And you have those rest days. And would you believe, you know, within a year or so of doing that and following that pattern, I've managed to run 2 half marathons and I've not had any injuries, which is incredible, given I got injuries straight away. And that's because I ran using a training plan. Now, the reason this is relevant to you guys is that if you're starting from a position of zero and you've not done any exercise, that's fine. I was exactly the same. But by following professional plan, I managed to get there without injuries. That's the critical piece of this. It was without injuries. Tip number three, ensure you're doing something. So if there is a day that you think, oh, I can't really be bothered to do too much, try and ensure you're doing something, because I've got a fantastic quote here, which is, the only bad workout is the one that didn't happen. So try and do something when you can. Tip four is to reward yourself after exercise. And, you know, if there's a favorite program that you have every week that you want to watch, or if there's a particular thing that you really enjoy doing at home at the moment, now that you're, you know, in isolation or you're with your partner, whatever it might be, you know, reward yourself with that after the exercise. So say, okay, I'm not going to watch that episode of Killing Eve until I've done my exercise, because that's going to be my reward. Number five, and the final tip, and essentially it's scheduling in rest. So making sure that your rest is actually acknowledged and scheduled in your diary, so you protect that time so you actually do rest. And you can do the same with sleep. In fact, it's very much recommended. You know, if you had a notification now saying you've got a meeting starting in 15 minutes, you would attend that meeting in 15 minutes. Why not have the same for sleep? Okay, it's now time I need to get ready for bed so I get enough sleep so I'm fit and ready for the next day. So scheduling your rest and scheduling your sleep is a good way of creating a healthy routine. So stay safe, stay well, and stay connected.
Thanks, Chris. I like to schedule in some rest time. I feel like it's so easy to burn out if you don't do that. One thing that I've started doing recently is putting rest breaks in my calendar so that I get a reminder and it actually makes me take them.
Yeah, because it's so easy when you're working, especially when you're like, you get very into something, you forget to take that time to yourself. And if you're still working from home, let's say, you don't get your usual water, is it the water bottle break? What do you call them? Water filter?
Coffee break.
Yeah, let's say you don't get your usual coffee break.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I've always heard of like tea break and coffee break. Not that I drink tea and coffee, but you know.
There you go. What do you drink? Water,
juice, or water, or hot chocolate.
I was gonna say you're much healthier than me, but you're not. But that's called hot chocolate. Well, that's probably good. Hot chocolate in this cold weather can make you nice, warm, and cozy.
Yeah, I love a good hot chocolate on a nice cold day.
Yeah, and if you would like to let us know what is your comfort drink, well, you can always email us. It's radio@rnab.org.uk, or you know what, just tweet Holly. Tweet your favorite drink to comfort drink to Holly. What's your Twitter, Holly?
Why does she actually do this every single show?
Oh, go on.
Right, my Twitter is Life of a Blind Girl.
Now, there you go. Let's all tweet at Holly. And for now, we are going to take a little music break. We're going to head to the 80s and we'll be back shortly with today's music therapy moment. That's Philip Oakey, Giorgio Moroder, and their song Together in Electric Dream, bringing us really nicely to the end of today's happy hour. It was so lovely to have your company on the show today. And before Holly and I run off, we do have one more thing for you.
Yes, Glenn is returning to share a song that means a lot to him. But if you'd like to share a music therapy moment to be featured on a future episode of the Happy Hour, well, it's quite simple. What are those details again, Paulina?
Well, you can just email us. It's radio@rnab.org.uk. You can find us on Twitter @rnabradio. Or you know what? We're also on Facebook as RNAB Connect Radio.
Now, that's it from us. We'll leave you with Glenn to announce the closing song. And Paulina and I will return with a brand new episode of The Happy Hour in a couple weeks' time. Bye! Bye.
Hi, I'm Glenn, and my motivational song is Defying Gravity by Kerry Ellis. Much like the character Elphaba in the musical Wicked, from which the song originates, I also grew up feeling very much ostracized by society because of my eyesight. You know, I was very shy because people were avoiding me. But over the years, I've grown in confidence, and in recent years in particular, I've taken this big leap of moving to London and changing my life, and it's just changed everything for me. I've grown hugely in confidence. And this song is all about that, taking that big leap and trying new things, and even has a line in it about the vision being hazy, which I take a double meaning to. And Kerry Ellis is a fantastic singer. Brian May also features on the track. And I love Queen very much. And of course, it reflects my love of theatre. So this is Defying Gravity by Kerry Ellis.
Too late to go back to sleep. It's time to trust my instincts.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full along with all the interviews, tips and our chat, just catch the full show plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. And we have new episodes every other week. But for now, I hope you enjoyed the Happy Hour podcast and we'll see you on the next episode.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.